This episode of Off Course is brought to you by Titleist. Their long-standing slogan of being the number one ball in golf is backed by years of innovation, high-end performance, consistency, and quality. From their tour-trusted Pro V1 lineup to the TrueFuel, golfers can find a ball that performs well for their game at their price point. Visit www.titleist.com to learn more.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me today, not so much of a back-to-back, but really glad to have you back on, buddy, because we had a great chat a couple weeks ago, is Mr. Josh Babbitt. He's on Twitter at JB_THP Golf. You should go follow him, give him some grief. What's going on, Josh?
Not too much. Lots of going on with golf in general. Yeah. We're in between major weeks. We have the PGL announcement. I joined a course. You know, you told me I had to get out and play more golf. So there's a lot going on.
I did say that. And your wife also had a comment or conversation about how 18 holes is a little bit frustrating for her. You're now a private golf course player. Is 12 goals going to be a reality for you?
Well, I've been a proponent for going on a decade that golf should be broken down into sixes instead of nines. I've said it for years. Some people listen. Some people get angry, raise their fist to the sky. No, golf is 18 holes. Nobody's trying to take away 18 holes of golf. I just believe with the influx of new players, a trend of 6, 12, and 18 holes makes the most sense. And there will be some routing work that has to be done, not at all courses, but some. But offering that opportunity to get out and play 6 holes, get out and play 12 holes, or just continue to play your 18, or for those people who want a few extra, they get 24 now instead of having to commit to 27, it opens the door to a lot of different things. She's on board with 12 holes. Ironically enough, during our initiation, I kind of mentioned it because this course kind of would work for that routing. And the membership director said, you know, that's the best idea I've heard. So it's something I stand behind. I've been saying it for a long time, and maybe it'll get some legs.
Well, I've got a couple of questions to ask you. Number one, I love the idea of finding a way to structure that, because I believe currently you have to play at least 7 holes to count a 9. Now, at my course, our 6-hole wraps around to our parking lot. So by the time you commit 7, that means you're playing 8 and 9 as well. There have been many times between end of night and or bad weather or, you know, whatever it may be, we bail after 6. And it's like, you know, it's not that I played bad or good. It's just that I can't, unless I play 7, I can't post that score. There's a little bit of freedom there, that feeling of comfort that you go out there and put the time in, and you can still apply that to your handicap. But I do have this question for you. Do you think 6 holes is enough to really sink your teeth into a round? Sometimes it takes longer to really, you know, get out there and start scoring.
For me personally, no. For the millions that are taking up the game, yeah, they might have an hour and a half to kill, and that's the best way to go about and do it. They don't have the pressure of, I've got to give up what now is like almost 5 hours for a round of golf. They can give up an hour and a half, get out there, play some holes, spend some time at the range, enjoy themselves without the pressure of a full day away from the family. I think that there's a little bit to that. I also think that opens the door for some pace things that could, most people are like, oh, it's a pace nightmare. It's actually, with people coming on and off the course at different intervals, if it's worked well, it could be a pace saving atmosphere.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because if you, let's say, just for example, you have a committed 6-hole playing group, obviously it's not 9, obviously it's not 18, so you start to talk about revenue, but then you can find ways to release on the back as well, and by back I mean back 9. But I'll tell you one thing.
Back six.
But I'll tell you one thing, buddy. There is no bigger thrill than sitting there and waiting for groups on 7, 8, 9 and making the turn and going, where did they go? I don't care. It's wide open now.
It doesn't matter if you're a fast golfer, slow golfer. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Everybody on the internet is fast, but fast golfer, slow golfer, or anything else. If you were playing behind a foursome and waiting, it doesn't matter if they have groups in front of them or anything else, but if you're playing behind a foursome and waiting at the turn, if they detour to the car or go up for a lunch or whatever, and you get to go by them, it is better than making an ace. It's better than an eagle. It's better than the perfect drive. It is the greatest feeling in golf.
Well, I've never made an ace. Thanks for rubbing that one in. So good to know that it's not that great, but I would say it's kind of like winning the lotto, at least like the scratch off. You get your free ticket, maybe a couple bucks for dinner. You know, that it's such a good feeling, but I think we're also looking at this from a diehard golfer standpoint a little too hard. And I think to your point, a lot of these folks who are trying to incorporate it or are interested in seeing it happen are those fringe players or new players who, as you mentioned, don't want to commit the half their day to playing a game. And, you know, as appealing as it is to me, maybe this is like that foot in the water type of thing where the range just isn't enough, but you're not ready to commit to that full round.
That's actually where this all started. Was I was at a resort and the golf course was literally packed, and we pull up to a par three, and it's a famous one at PGA National. This group was in front of us of people that you could tell they were new to the game or trying it out for the first time or whatever. And this is the Bear Trap, one of the hardest par threes in all of golf. And the guy made a comment. He's like, man, this back nine is really hard after hole 11 or 12. And I started thinking, like, this guy doesn't even want to be there. He doesn't want to be out there. So freeing up the ability and then having an additional revenue source for courses, because I know that nobody wants to talk about raising rates and things like that, but having an additional revenue source where somebody might come in for an hour or hour and a half, and they don't want to just hit the range and putting green, because not everybody's into that. They want to try their game on the course. And the diehards that'll say, well, they should spend their time on the range and lessons for the first year. That's ridiculous. Nobody wants to take up a sport where they're not allowed to play it for a year. That's crazy talk. So you give the ability to do this and have a course have different rates. Let's say for round number sake, it's $100 to play a round, and it's $75 to play 12, and it's, you know, $50 to play six, whatever the course numbers are. You divide it up equally or close to equally and just price it based on the six and let people do their thing. I think it does so much for the growing group that are coming from Topgolf or others that may go to Topgolf for a 2 hour span, but the idea of going and sitting in the sun instead of having a drink and some food for 5 hours isn't that appealing. Well, maybe if you get them in the door for a six-hole round where they can have some fun on the real course, and then that slowly grows towards they're playing a full 18, it opens up the door to so much opportunity.
Well, let me ask you a question, because pace of play has been referenced already once or twice. I know as a private golf course player that I am unbelievably fortunate to have an aggressive pace of play. There have been a couple of times in the last week or two, I guess the last month, where we've been on track for a 4 hour round and it's felt slow to us. And I remind the guys, you know, as we close in on our the completion of our round, I remind them, look, you know, if we are anywhere else right now, I think one of them was on Memorial Day weekend. If we are anywhere else right now, that's a 6 hour round. So we're still out here for another two and miserable. How, I guess my question is going to be, from your area, what's the pace like down there right now? And then with now that you're a private course guy, do they have pretty heavy expectations on pace of play there?
Nashville in general is the sixth fastest growing city in the United States. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of golfers coming into this area as Amazon, Oracle, and obviously already having Nissan and Bridgestone and all these companies here. Bridgestone Global, not Bridgestone Golf. There's a lot of golfers, and there's a lot of private and public courses, and some beautiful. Gaylord Springs down the way is a gorgeous course that's public. I think you played that last time you were here.
I did.
I think that pace in general is still okay. At this course, I brought it up during the initiation. She said, I'd love to tell you it's 3.5 like it was last year. But right now we're at 4. And that's because we are at our capacity for memberships. Tee times still aren't that bad to get around. We have an app, a mobile app for our club, and you can go on and book tee times. As long as you do it in advance, you're fine. But they're at 4 hours. That's okay to me. I obviously, you know me, I play really fast. When I used to go out at my old course in Florida, if I was the first one out, I'd finish in about an hour, hour and 10. And that didn't even feel like rushing to me, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I'm not a flag stick puller. I just get up there and go and do my thing. But I think pace is still okay. And I do think that going back to the 12 hole thing, I think it opens the door to that. Assuming a course has proper routing, there would be some routing issues at a lot of courses.
Speaking of things that would slow you down in your 1 hour round, you're not really a glove takeoff guy either. No. Are you?
I play with a glove on the entire round. So like a and little... I know that's super weird. And the reason I do that is most people take their glove off. They say it's because of feel. I don't actually believe that personally. I think it's something they've seen, they're used to, and they do it now. For me, I don't like the change in feel from short game area, chipping, wedge play, and things like that, to then taking it off. That's not my thing. So I play with it on the entire time, and I'll take it off, you know, in between holes. But when it comes to actually hitting the ball, putting or otherwise, I keep it on.
So your answer is way better than Lexi's, who said, I just always have had it on, which was a brilliant response, by the way, as these golfers are. I'll tell you one thing, though. I've always taken off because I don't like having the glove on. It's one of those things where, especially in the summer, sooner I get it off, the sooner it has a chance to dry out a little bit. But the one thing for me is I don't care if I putt with it on. I prefer not to, just based on, you know, comfort, I guess. You get stuck in doing something and then kind of let it ride. Even around the green, where obviously traction in your hands is not going to play a role, I definitely want to get that glove back on before I hit my shot again. And it's consistency. We're talking about greenside wedges. Obviously, you don't need a glove on for that, but it has to be on.
Yeah, I know this is weird. It goes back to a pace thing. It grinds my gears watching somebody who's getting ready to hit and then realize they don't have their glove on and have to go back to the cart or dig into their pocket or get it. It's the same guy who runs out to the ball with their laser to laser and then runs back to the cart. And I'm like, take some damn clubs with you. How hard is that?
It's called shot prep. Okay.
Yeah.
Pay attention, folks.
Be aware of where you are. You're the general awareness of the public as a whole, away from golf or otherwise, is terrible. I'll give you two examples. Have you ever been shopping and you're pushing the cart and the person in front of you just stops in the middle?
Oh yeah.
And they just walk away from their cart. Like, pay attention.
So you're
it's not that hard.
You're a cart guy at the grocery store. I've always been the guys. I will only buy what I can carry.
That is so weird.
I remember in college on a budget, I would go out to, we had a brand new Walmart out there, and I would go and buy groceries. And I would literally pile things on of a box of cereal until I couldn't do it anymore. And then I would check out and leave.
That is by far.
Hey.
It's not the most bizarre thing I've learned about you. There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, but, yeah. And it was never ranch, I swear.
I don't believe that either.
So I want to talk a little bit about the range etiquette too, because this is something we discussed on THP this week. And I'm curious to your thoughts, because I don't think traditionally you're a huge range guy. You're more of a let's go play guy. But are you... Do you think there's a level of expectation from an etiquette standpoint when you're on a range? And do you think it's location specific?
Yes and no. First, I am a range guy because I'm old and I need the body to warm up a little bit. I got to find the bottom of my swing and things like that. There's a level of etiquette from the idea of, hey, you know, you got to, again, it goes back to general awareness of where you are. You got to prepare for other people. I watched a guy at the range when I was fortunate enough to be out at Bellerive a couple weeks ago, and this guy was digging craters all over the range. And he would just slide back and forth, and I'm making the symbol today, and you guys can't see this, like back and forth instead of doing a line or a box or anything. And the next person there is literally not going to be able to stand on the range evenly or find a place to hit from. I'm a line guy, and then back up to the next line and so on. But, you know, I also understand that not everybody has a skill set that'll make that divot the same every time. You know, we deal with a lot of over-the-top golfers. I'm one of them. So their divot's going to be slightly pointed to the left. And that doesn't necessarily go well with, you know, keeping your divot in a perfectly straight line. So there's a little bit of that too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was an interesting conversation. And I enjoyed listening to people talk about their experiences. And not to mention, you get a little bit stuck on, especially me being a private club member, very fortunate to be that for over two decades now between pre-college and post-college. But you get kind of focused on the fact that we play off nice grass, and not everyone who goes to a range has that opportunity. And especially from the amount of golf that's being played right now, I would imagine ranges that aren't on mats are just getting absolutely obliterated by activity.
I would agree. Now, I'm going to give the listeners a little backside story here. That's not the right word. Backside is not the right word. But,
a little backstory?
Yeah, about Dan. I'm filling in for somebody today, and he said, what do you want to talk about? We have a list of topics. We haven't talked about any of those yet. So I'm going to throw a curveball at him. Is good. Every course, public or private, but we'll stick to private here, has a quirk. You know, something that
you're not doing this right now. You are not doing this.
I want to inform the listeners who haven't been following this about a conversation Dan and I have been having about one of the reasons I joined this course is because I wanted to get out and walk more.
Yeah.
And they allow push carts, and I'm fortunate. I use a Moto Caddy. I think it's the best electric cart on the market. I have two. I have an MGI Navigator also that I haven't touched since the Moto Caddy came in. Now, Dan, at his course, he's giving me the finger thing right now, also has a push cart. Dan's not allowed to use his push cart at his course. In fact, he can rent one from his course, but they're beaten up and everything else, or he can carry his own bag. I said that I thought that rule was ridiculous, but I understand a course needing to make revenue that maybe they should go with a trail fee, you know, just like they have for electric carts or riding carts, where you pay at our course, it's $100 a month extra for riding cart privilege instead of paying by the way you go. And he thought that was a good idea and the club declined it. So I want to know, because we've never actually talked about this, what is the reason that they don't allow push carts? And is that your biggest quirk, an issue with your club?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that I think could be done a lot better at my golf course. And I attempted to get more involved. I was president of the advisory board for about a year and a half. I was involved in different committees, made a couple of nice quality of life changes to the rules when the USGA updated that. If I had to pick one thing, you'd probably get me to say that in the spring and the fall, 85 to 95 degree weather. I'm not that worried about it. But, you know, common sense to me says that if you have a membership that wants to walk, it's a good positive thing, exercise being what it is, and they're willing to pay a trail fee at no cost to you. I think if there is a revenue issue, you eat it because as it stands, we can't even push on the weekends before 2 p.m. anyway. So the window is pretty small. But it's my understanding there are a couple members who push all the time and pay that fee. And I guess that's too much for them to bear.
And what do they charge per round for this push cart?
So it's $10. And
it's $20 to ride.
It's $24 to ride now.
Oh.
Yeah, they bumped that up. I think it's still $10 to push. I won't do it because, first of all, I don't like touching things that other people have touched. That's not really appealing to me. But also, they have, you know, standard Sun Mountain, not bad carts, but like with anything in that condition, the more you use it, the more broken down it gets. And I have a brand new, beautiful click gear in my basement that I can't use. It's actually kind of THP green too. It's pretty sick. But
I think I was going to get you this wonderful Bag Boys Nitron cart. Is to me the best push cart on the market. And you can't use it.
I can't. I mean, it just what I have sits there and collects dust. I'm about to gift it to my dad to take down south with him because he can actually use one down there. It's just kind of a silly thing because I worked pretty hard to get a collection of members who basically said, we'll pay a trail fee. We don't
What's
mind
the trail fee that you find acceptable?
I think $0 is acceptable. I think what I was willing to concede was probably like $150 to $200 a year. So that's basically 15 to 20 pushes.
Does your course offer a trail fee for riding carts?
No, they won't do that either.
Really?
Really. For a while, they sold it on, it was presentation. And then they used to have those big wide wheel rickshaws. They've gone through some weird stuff.
So I said that, you know, I understand that. And I said, if you averaged it out to two rounds a month and did it that way, that's $240 to $250. Maybe you even do three and it's $360 a year. It would be hard for a course to say no to that. And you'd still make your money back because you're not renting a riding cart at $24 a pop. I mean, if you play twice a month with that, that's another $600 a year. If you play eight times a month, you do the math that, you know, your fees go up dramatically. So yeah, that's something that when you first told me, I didn't even believe you.
Well, the window is a lot smaller than that, right? Because not everyone's playing during the week. And during the weekend, you can only, I mean, it's basically from 2 p.m. to, I guess, I think you probably get in 18 if you played at about 4:30 right now. So it's really only, what's that, 20-ish tee times that can be impacted, but maybe 15 tee times would be impacted by it on the weekend.
Yeah.
But there's also guys who would push or ride. Certainly right now I'm not pushing in 90 degree heat. That's crazy talk. In the afternoon of a weekend. It's like, I mean, if it was early morning, sure, but you can't push then anyway. So I said $150 would be fair. Plus they could sell the carts through the pro shop and offer a free trail fee or whatever to whoever buys through there. So they can dictate what people are buying. They can dictate, they can gain sales there. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, man. And I just don't.
And getting out and walking is healthy if your course is walkable. I come from an area where my course wasn't walkable in the past. Now I'm at a course that is.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone says the escalation is the biggest concern. Well, what about the riding carts? Okay. It's a different conversation. What about this? What about that? You know, I hate an argument that always comes with, well, this will open the floodgates to all these other crazy things. And it's like, no, because all you got to do is write it in there what it is and then, you know, stop being ridiculous.
Most golfers are riders.
I think that's fair.
At country clubs. I think, you know, as the age demographic goes up, that's what happens. So I don't think someone is all immediately going to make the financial commitment to become a walker. We hope they do and consider some of these amazing carts and get out and get healthy if your course is walkable. But I completely understand that it's not for everybody. I've switched to an electric cart. I can't imagine pushing one anymore. I mean, it's that, I know that sounds crazy, but when you come down here next time, I'll have an electric cart for you to use and maybe rub that in a little further that you're not allowed to use one. And that's the end of it. It's funny though. We were talking about Gaylord Springs earlier in Nashville course here. They don't allow people to use push carts.
Just none at all. Can you walk?
He says yes, but I've only seen one or two people out there walking. It's like after 11 on the weekends and after 10:30 on during the week.
Because it's not, they don't allow push carts to walk at all.
No,
it's very fair, huh? Dude, I just think, you know, these courses, I get that some of them or a lot of them are for profit. I get that they have this sort of mentality or presentation they're trying to present. Walking is like the purest form of golf. right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, like, and if it was a revenue way, there's a way to add revenue to this to make it work for everybody.
Yeah.
The idea that this is all about the cash, I don't believe. What I believe is that people who are making decisions are path of least resistance people.
And that's the big story, I think.
And that is one area where I despise debating anybody who's a path of least resistance person, because they're not going to see anything that might add any amount of work or change to their life.
That's the big story. I don't think the presentation to ownership clicked all the boxes that I would have liked. But I want to segue to an actual point that we're supposed to talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, we're 20 minutes into this thing and we haven't talked about anything on the list.
Okay. Speaking of path of least resistance, there's a group out there that's creating a lot of inability to experience this from the PGA Tour at this point, and that's the PGL. To the point where I actually read something this morning that said the PGA won't even meet with the PGL to have a conversation. What is your take on all this, especially now that we have sort of an understanding and a letter out there from PGL?
You know, I have mixed feelings on it. I'm for change, especially at the PGA Tour. I think there's some major issues from a what the viewers want versus what's better for the tour segment. And I think the PGL has an interesting idea. With that said, their letter yesterday was a complete joke. It's not about the money. It's about betterment of the game. And then further down, it's we're going to go get a release, an IPO. So it's transparent, when really it's an exit strategy for the investors. So, that stuff is nonsense. The idea that a person on the PGA Tour can't play in one of these is only as good as the person who's committing. And I'll use an example from years ago. Years ago, there was a tournament where Stevie Williams was the caddy for Tiger Woods, and it was really hot. And during one of the practice rounds, Stevie was wearing shorts. And they said, you can't wear shorts, you've got to wear pants. Well, Stevie did it in shorts. And they talked about a fine, and they talked about this, and they said you weren't going to be able to play. And they interviewed Tiger, and he says, I guess you'll see me in Europe next year. The tournament ended, nobody ever did a thing. If Tiger Woods, Rory, one of these big, huge name players says, you know, I'm going to play in the PGL for a few events, what do you think? The PGA Tour is going to say, no, you're not allowed to play in our events anymore? It's crazy. Both of these are about money, which is okay. I'm a capitalist at heart. I don't know what can happen from this. They're not going to get the top 48 players in the world. And we already have that in the WGC in the top 64 in a no-cut event. And it's not exactly a ratings barn burner. So the idea that this is what we want, and then they talk about teams and things like that. Teams work because of geography.
Yeah.
That's what gets people excited about teams. Saying that Rory's playing for the Minneapolis North Stars or whatever you wanted to throw out there for my hockey fans of the past.
Minnesota North Stars, man.
Yeah, relax. Same thing. It's the same state. That's nonsense. They tried this in team tennis. It didn't really work. It's not going to work in golf. But getting the best players in the world to compete at amazing venues every week is intriguing for the viewer. I mean, I think there's a lot of that now, but the wraparound season definitely kills a lot of the PGA Tour momentum.
Here's what I got stuck on, and this is from their letter alone. They said it's not about the money, but the whole presentation of the PGL is basically we're just going to pump money at players until they find us interesting. So it's not about the money for us, it's about the money for them. So now we're here as viewers going, okay, does this interest me? Because all these guys are doing is going to get a paycheck. It reminds me a lot of the Saudi tournament that went on. You know,
there's Saudi money in the PGL.
Did I care about that tournament? No. Did I watch it? No. Is it appealing to me to know that a guy's only going to do something because there's a massive paycheck waiting for him? No. You know, that it just read really strange to me when they made that claim, even though everything we've read thus far is it's everything to do with money.
I tend to agree. I didn't like the framework of it, and I don't know who their communications firm is or marketing firm. Well, we're partners with the fans, and then further down, well, this is not an interest to trade securities. You know, like, you're not partners with the fans. You're drumming up interest, and I'm for that. I'm for changes to professional golf that make it more enjoyable for the viewer, because at the end of the day, these people who say, I don't care, I'm just there for a paycheck, like, go to hell. You're paid millions of dollars to play a game. You're blessed with it. You know, use that to your advantage. But I believe that the PGA Tour struggles with A, too many events, and B, there's a general dynamic from the independent contractor aspect that you can tell a golfer what to do without being able to really govern. They can govern the tournaments, they can govern the purses, they can govern a lot of things, but you can't make a guy play in a tournament. And that's a dynamic that I think a lot, some of these leagues would like to move away from if they're to make it. You know, we're going to sign a contract with a guy and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, it would take hundreds of millions of dollars to get this off the ground, and throwing an obscene amount of money to people who are already millionaires tens and hundreds times over. And I'm not sure it's there, because there's still a historical segment of winning majors, winning at Augusta National, playing in the US Open, playing in the Open Championship that won't exist in the PGL format. Now, I do think there are tournaments that watered down what they're after, which is the WGC and others. But we have too many tournaments on the PGA Tour right now. And I'm not for necessarily taking those away, but I am for a better feeder system than what we have in place now.
Like a wraparound for the wraparound season. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that the John Deere and the Louisiana tournament, I don't think they need to exist. I think you can make those feeder events to a bigger thing.
So I mentioned this a little bit on social this week. I think something that would appeal a lot more to me, and I know I'm not the standard audience of golf. I am a big online viewer. I watch PGA Tour live. If I have time on Sundays, I'll watch, because we don't have cable here. We just have satellite, which gets local. So I'll be able to watch the finish if I commit to it. But I think if the PGL goes a little bit in a different direction and says we're going to triple down on our online coverage, provides extreme connectivity to the viewership. If you're going to sell me on this player, let me watch the player golf. You know, kind of the Masters did an unbelievable job of their online coverage this year. Can they find a way to monetize having these guys put under the microscope like this while they play on the tour? I think that would be a more impactful decision than anything they've said thus far, because it provides me the access I don't feel like I can get right now.
And you would hit a core golfer that through the online system that is ideal for demographics of commercials. With that said, I don't know if the audience would be vast enough.
Well, let's make it more of an app thing. So you can watch, and we can do tiers too. Single tier would be you get the coverage that's presented. Let's call it $5 a month or whatever it is. Then you can add a couple dollars and say, all right, now you can have featured groups plus this, plus that. And it's all based on an app, because let's be honest, man, the idea of sitting down in front of the TV and watching something is kind of dying. Like there has to be, especially for something like golf, iPad, phone, you know, all these other ways of watching, computer, there has to be a greater accessibility there. Otherwise I don't think you can make that commitment for a 4-day tournament, even though I think they said 3 days.
Yeah, I do think they said 3 days, but and you might be
what I'm
right.
Saying though, right?
I still think that there's a TV audience. I do.
Not saying there's not. Absolutely. Not
I do think that you have to have a little more, especially for your early rounds. And I think, as you said, nobody does it better than the Masters. And I know Amazon's getting involved in the PGA Tour, and we know that that'll usually mean high tech. And we are not that far away from the ability to just click on a person and watch them play. I mean,
yeah,
yes, it takes more cameras and things like that. And people always ask why they're not showing golf when there's a 4-man playoff going on, because nobody wants to watch a guy stroll down the fairway and his caddy lugging his clubs waiting to get to the ball. There's no action going on. But the flip side of that is CBS, NBC, NBC specifically, they've got to do a better job of covering golf. And if there's anything that gives them a better, I'll go back. The NFL is the king of all sports as far as viewership. Nothing comes close. And to give people who don't pay attention to ratings and stuff a glimpse, the NFL draft first round, which is nonsense, 15 minutes between picks, you find out that the guy is selected and then they move on to the next one. That had higher ratings than both the World Series and NBA Finals. So the NFL doesn't have to change much currently. Yep. But even their ratings are down a little bit for a myriad of reasons. The PGA Tour does need to change things. And if you go back to when the NFL, where I was going before, when the XFL with Vince McMahon was coming on the scene and they were doing all this crazy stuff, the NFL has actually incorporated a lot of that into their coverage to make it better. Camera angles, live scenes, things like that. So I think that there's a way to work together. It's not going to be together, but together with finger quotes, where you're going to see some stuff possibly in coverage that will end up being incorporated into mainstream broadcast.
So let me ask you this, because we've seen different versions of the online coverage occur. And I feel like every time we see something a little bit different, it feels like they're scrambling to find a way to verbally cover what's being portrayed. Do you think, especially when we're talking about the core golfers, the guys who would put the little extra money into it, do you think simply having cameras set up on tee boxes and greens and maybe center fairway without any sort of audio feedback from announcers, do you think that would be enough to...
No.
You don't think so?
I think everybody loves the idea of no commentary until there's no commentary.
You love the idea until they have no one to complain about, right?
Yeah. I think that commentary does add things. Also, the ball's not easy to track a lot of times. There's not going to be top tracer on every single shot, things like that. So I think that there needs to be some sort of commentary, but you could have somebody in the booth that's not out on the course. You don't have to have a person following every group. But for the amount of money that's available for coverage, they could have a person out with each group.
That's true.
I make the case all the time. There is no reason in the world that the PGA Tour currently, not USGA, PGA Tour doesn't have a rules official with every group. There's no reason.
So why don't we get like the top 18 announcers, put a microphone on them, give them a lesson on the rule book. and then we mark both things down. We're good.
Yeah, I just think it's necessary, but I do think coverage is key. And almost as much as the players involved. I'll use a perfect example. Let's say Brooks Koepka commits to doing this. He seems like, I don't think he would, but let's just say he commits to this.
He seems like he would. As long as his
you'd tune in week one to see it.
Yeah, probably.
As a golf fan, you would. They need one name. They probably need a handful. But just to get off the ground, you need a name or two. Otherwise, I don't care about seeing Andrew Klein from, you know, Warner Robins, Georgia, teeing it up because he almost made the tour at one time. That is no interest.
That is funny because you mentioned earlier about supporting the feeder tours as well. I think that's a bigger sell here, and especially give me a reason to be interested. Show me that you guys are working hard to make sure the next group of golfers coming through has an opportunity to shine. And between the difficulties of the price that it takes to get through some of the feeder tours, you know, they can do more. And I'd love to read about it. Do you think Monahan ever takes that meeting? I mean, he's got to at some point, right?
Yeah, it depends how serious this gets. All it takes is one player saying, you know, I'm on the fence. I would at least hear them out. And all of a sudden that meeting takes place.
Yeah, it's fine now. When they have all the power, right?
But let me ask you a question. So we have all these tournaments a year. Every week there's a new tournament with the wraparound season.
Mm-hmm.
We know for a fact that 30% of them never get more than a handful of big names. Wouldn't those be better suited as some sort of different event, whether it's a co-ed event? This sounds weird. I don't know if you can say
mixed event
anymore. Yeah, mixed event. Sorry.
Well, they're doing that event. Right now in the Euro Tour, right?
Yeah, or this a feeder weekend. Tour, mm-hmm. or, you know, let's do a speed golf tour. I don't mean it's you need a whole event where people are sprinting, but let's have a shot clock out there like they've used on the European Tour and get these guys in 4 hours and show that it can be done. Let's do, for lack of a better word, gimmick events where they're feeder options, but get some of these guys on the Corn Ferry that are close, get a handful of big names and let something else happen, because nobody outside of diehards is tuning in for the John Deere.
So you mentioned feeder stuff. What about a mixed from take the top 20 earners from the Corn Ferry and bring them up to the PGA and pair them up with someone and see about a tournament like that? You start to get these names into the households and give people a reason to cheer for these guys coming up.
I agree with that. And I think you don't have to stop at just Corn Ferry. You have other tours like the Form Tour and some international tours, Japan, Korea, that all have the ability. You send, you know, 15 guys from each. All of a sudden you have 60 guys from there. You take 60 guys from the PGA Tour and you have a paired event.
I would tune into that 100%. Not to mention the fact that there hasn't been a good mixed one yet for LPGA. I would absolutely tune in to something like that over a
low-end. I used to go to the JCPenney Classic in Palm Harbor, Florida every year.
I think we need to bring that stuff back. I think it's selling from an interest perspective, and you know, people
just get
comfortable.
But let me ask you a question. And this is the least PC question to ask, and it's not really a fair question.
Bring it on.
What does that do for the PGA Tour? It does a lot for the LPGA Tour, and it does a lot for the LPGA players. But all it does for the PGA Tour is you get a small spike to see what happens, and then you have half your tour not playing that week.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. From a player perspective, it's not great. But from an interest perspective, if you can create a new tournament each year that actually gets TV coverage, interest on TV coverage, I think that's a big deal. I think if there's two or three of those, I mean, even if there is some sort of like solid Euro and PGA Tour mashup, I think you need to create interest where there isn't any. As much as it's not great for the players who don't get a chance to be involved, it definitely improves the overall optics from the tour's perspective.
I think that there's something there. And, you know, there's an old saying in marketing books called bottle rocket marketing, which is throw everything you can at something and it'll explode right then. And you might have some fall off. I think that that's okay at this level. I think you can do these mixed events and have some fun with it. I think you can do feeder events. I think you can do a lot of different things, but you have to have the players on board for it. And sure. I think that that's where there's a little bit of blowback. It's just not public.
Yeah, and you have to have the guys who are going to have a good time with it. I mean, obviously, you can't take someone out there who's grinding and not interesting and put them with a lady or a Corn Ferry guy and say, you know, make this interesting. It's just not going to happen.
Do I need to do my Dustin Johnson impression again?
Yeah, but no. He's one
of those guys that... Yeah. It wouldn't be interesting. And he's a great player and number one in the world, but he wouldn't make something interesting.
I would love to see which one of the guys truly stood out in an event like that. I think there's a chance for guys to be really surprising. I do. As much as they have their own current conditions, I think. And not to mention, it'd be also really fun to try and pair up people with similar mindsets from each tour, where it's like, you know, if you're super vocal, you put someone with somebody who's super vocal and it'd be pretty funny. You take someone who's like fiery or whatever, put him someone similar. I think it'd be fun to watch him. I'd tune in for that for sure.
Okay. Number one question. Let's assume every player on tour is in this mixed event.
Yeah.
What's the one guy who's going to mansplain it to his playing partner about what's going on and look like a complete fool? Which the player who's going to mansplain the first approach shot?
Are we really putting ourselves on blast like this?
Yes.
Oh no. Oh. God, there's so many good options. Who do you like?
The most vocal would be there. Like Spieth would be up there. Oh, yeah. Phil would be up there. although I think it would be more of one of the younger guys that would surprise somebody. Like I could see a few of these younger guys just trying to mansplain it to a girl who's three under, let's say, for the round.
Yeah.
And her just giving this look of disdain.
Well, they could do like a practice round, or even the first day could be all about positioning or something like that, and just do like a weird scramble. You get him greenside and Phil's like, all right, I'm gonna hit this flop shot here. It's gonna land 2 inches from the cup and it's gonna spin a little bit. And then you just get the girl who looks at him and just kind of pitches one out and puts it like right by the cup. That'd be super funny.
So there's a lot that could happen there, but I'm for it. And my gut feeling says with the new LPGA regime and the PGA Tour needing some pizzazz, I think we're going to see something like that. That's just a gut feeling.
You know, there's one thing we haven't had a chance to talk about today, and I'm really interested in it because it just...
There's actually a lot on our list, but that's okay.
One specific thing is the new shaft that came out from Project X. I know there's two in the line. There's a couple videos out there, including one from you and Keenan over from True Temper and Project X that's on our website right now and on our YouTube. I started watching it this morning and only got about 3 minutes into it, finding
Thanks
out
for
that,
your viewership.
Hey, this was a last minute addition. I plan to watch it after we record today. You better stop picking on me. What's going on with the new Project X Riptide?
Well, so this started when I started seeing this shaft on tour that I didn't know what it was. And I reached out to Don Brown and Keenan. And Keenan said, you know, I'm actually going to be headed to Vanderbilt for some stuff. So I can swing by.
I'm going to cut you off. Is this before or after he had like a full on social media blitz to get these shafts from Don to try out himself?
Before.
Okay. Because that was pretty funny.
Yeah. So this was before. We've actually had this video done for a while. But we don't want to release something to everybody when it's not available for months. It's like, hey, let's get excited and then fizzle.
Right.
So Keenan came over, and if you watch the video, or if anybody does, you'll see during the video, I'm not looking at the camera or Keenan the entire time. I'm just staring at it. It's one of the most striking shafts I've seen in person, but it's a pretty cool story because there's a lot of tech elements to it, such as a torque story that's rather interesting, especially how it incorporates feel, as well as a ball flight. And we're seeing something different on the tour because it's picking up major steam on tour. And we're seeing something a little different in regards to players. They always go low, low, you know, at that level. These speeds are, that's not really happening with this one. You know, there's an LX and an MX, and there's quite a bit of play in the MX. So it's super intriguing.
That is interesting because Riptide has been around. It's this new iteration that's kind of making things interesting. I haven't hit them yet. I don't have any experience. I'm hoping there's a couple in the tech studio the next time I come into town. But yeah, I think everyone should go take a look at this video. Like I said, I got about 3 minutes in before you texted me and said I'm ready to record. So I've got to learn a little bit more.
I think
about
that people will watch this, get a good idea of the tech story. They're going to be hitting fitters and available for sale really soon. And I have a feeling it's going to be very popular. In fact, I'll go out on a limb and say this will be one of the most liked shafts from Project X since when original Hazardous came out.
I was going to ask you about that because they've had some really killer concepts come through. I'm still stuck on OG Hazardous Yellow just because I'm a weirdo. And it sounds like there's some new options that are out there for me. So I'm excited to try it for myself. And I hope everyone else does too. Are you putting one in play?
Yes, I will probably have the MX in like a 60 gram, 65 gram area in one of my drivers.
Which one?
Most likely number one.
Okay.
And that's something that I'm going to look forward for some long-term testing, and I'll provide the feedback on the forum and our website for that.
Cool. Well, this is the time of the episode, my friend. Do you have any questions for me?
Yes, but before we do that, I got to remind everybody. Last time I was on here, I said we had a big contest coming.
Okay.
Dropped yesterday on the website. I mean, we're recording this Thursday, so it drops today. But when this airs, it'll drop yesterday. we're doing something with ShotScope that is unbelievably cool. And we are giving away a trip to Florida, to Hammock Beach. So you're going to get airfare. You're going to get resort lodging and beautiful condos. You're going to get rounds of golf at the ocean course and the conservatory. You're going to get ShotScope swag. So new data watch, as well as a new rangefinder. And you're going to get to play golf with two people from ShotScope. And you're going to learn all about how data can help you. And we're going to live post this on our forum. But the most interesting part of this that people do not know is there's a lot of really good golfers in golf. Gavin from ShotScope is going to be one of the best you're going to see. Now, he's going to downplay this because he doesn't play as much anymore. But Gavin played in the Walker Cup. So we should see some fireworks out on the course as well, and possibly helping anybody who wants to get help on the course. I have a feeling he will be able to help some people.
I love that, because now we've basically put him on. We got him on the show saying he's going to dominate the conservatory and the ocean. So he has no choice but to play excellent golf there. And if he doesn't, we'll have to give him some grief. So
Have questions for you?
Yeah.
Yes. I have a list of them, but I'm only going to give you a couple.
Okay.
First.
Yeah.
What's up with not being allowed to use a push cart at your course?
I already answered that.
Okay. Second, at your course.
Yep.
At the turn.
Yep.
What's your food of choice?
I do not have a food of choice at the turn at my course. I typically take small bars. I like the Cliff Kid bars because they're not as heavy as the regular Cliff bars. Don't knock it till you try it.
I have tried it. I'm still going to knock
it. I don't believe you. But that's fine. I'm not really like a big food guy between my rounds. Maybe if there were some slightly better options, but I mean, they serve burgers, dogs, sandwiches. It's just not my thing to eat that kind of heavy meal. You?
Okay. I'm in the past hot dog guy at the turn. Love it.
Yeah.
There's a cleanliness factor for me that's a little weird with that. So I've shifted to a bar called an Outright Bar that I really like at the turn. That should work well.
Okay.
Second question. I had a conversation yesterday with somebody in golf who will remain nameless, and we talked about weather. What's your low threshold when you're willing to go out and play?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's definitely in the 30s, but there are requirements. Number one, it cannot be windy, because 30s and wind means feels like 20, and I'm not into that. Number two, there cannot be precipitation, because that ruins everything. Number three, I have to have hot hands, because I think hot hands can get you through some serious conditions, assuming that...
Bag boy electric hand warmer, even better. Invest in one. Trust me on that.
I have a story for one of my favorite early memories of you was an event. I think it was just more of a gathering we had. It was up in South Carolina. And it was way colder than you had anticipated it being. It was like early in the year. And you had this jacket on that had a heater built into
it. Yeah, still have that jacket.
And you were just kind of sort of playing golf, hating everything about everything. And your Florida blood was just absolutely frozen.
It's funny that the conversation, because I find Florida temperatures colder than other temperatures. And what I mean by that is there's moisture in the air. Yeah. So 50 in Florida feels like 40 here.
Right.
So that's an interesting dynamic. My final question to you.
Okay.
Your handicap was +4. And I know you don't like to talk about,
I hate it. Yeah.
The handicap, because it sometimes is a label that you don't like to have. You, as your season ends and you begin this new one, and you've said on social media and on the forum, you're struggling with your swing a little bit. Would you feel okay going into a match or something like that, knowing that your handicap is that, with the new soft cap and all this other stuff that goes along with it as seasons start?
Yeah, no, I hate it. There's a couple things that I don't think it really considers. I'll put the number out there, even though I hate to do it. I finished last year at an index of +3.3, which I consider to be a pretty unsustainable number. So when I came out this year, some things changed my swing. I had hurt my elbow a little bit. So my drive into the ball, it changed a bit. So what was a pull draw is now like a maybe fade. So there might be a fade that shows up. And what that's done is basically it's reduced my ability to score quite a bit. It adds the right side, and you know, the benefits of my swing being what it was are kind of going away. Now I'm bringing it back around. It's not as bad. But then the other part is, if I look at all my rounds, they're like mid 70s to, you know, somewhere between 74 and 78. So there's nothing to be upset about. I'm thrilled that the golf I get to play is sub 80. But my handicap right now, and I'll look at it as I'm talking here, with only one round remaining from 2020 on my handicap, it's currently, I think, a 0.7, and I've been soft capped. So it should be a 1.7, but I've been soft capped to a 0.7 because of that three stroke differential. I think it's insanity that there's not some sort of understanding that people who play out of seasons, places like Ohio, there's going to be change, and it should be a yearly change. I hate that I can't have an honest handicap. And I get, what do you call that? Like a reverse sandbagger? I have a vanity.
Yeah, I think that's what they call it. And, you know, it's not necessarily a fair thing. The handicap system is a unique one, because right now, my handicap says I'm a 9.3.
Well, I saw the way you played at Bellerive. That's nonsense.
Well, my last three rounds,
Bramble or whatever,
it wouldn't be fair for me to play somebody. And yeah, we were doing a format that's conducive. We were, you know, we were shambling and things like that. But I know the way I hit the ball. And in Chicago, I didn't shamble. I played my own ball. And that's not fair. But the handicap says it is. And I was curious, because you're working through the handicap thing. I don't take mine as seriously. I probably will now with the club. But I play for fun, and that's just the end of it. But there is some ways to fix this, and I know the handicap system and why it's in place and why it works the way it does. But there are some improvements that still need to be made, because the soft cap thing is not necessarily ideal. And
you know, it's funny you say that, buddy, because you mentioned I take it seriously. I take my handicap seriously.
I don't mean you take golf seriously. Take your handicap seriously.
But let's be clear. I don't play in anything that's handicapped. I don't do it.
You will be coming up.
That's true. It made no sense for me to do it last year, because I'm not about to give strokes back to people. That I basically handicapped myself out of playing in events. And I also don't like how competitive people get when using a handicap.
I'm with you there.
Straight up. So it's not an appeal to me. The only reason I have a handicap is to just know where my game is.
I'll use an example. When you and Chris Voschal from Mizuno were doing our live stream there, if you guys were playing 18 holes at the time, you would have had to give him almost 7 strokes. Yeah. And Chris is a really good player.
Was that before or after I put one in the water?
I think it was before. But
yeah.
So, you know, there is a dynamic there where that just doesn't make any sense. Now, right. The flip side is somebody said, well, stop playing so well.
Well, I did. That was a problem.
But yeah, I do think that for those who are keeping a handicap, we want to hear from you. Like, what are your thoughts on how it's working to describe your game?
Yeah, I put a thread up on THP, and I know not everyone forums. And I mentioned it on social, and all I got was grief about what my, you know, year low was. So yeah, we'd love to see your feedback, and whether you've been soft cap before, whether you think there's anything going on with the handicap system that does or doesn't work for you, because for me it's just been a hassle, and that's too bad, because I keep an honest handicap. If anything, it's lower than it should be, because I give my playing partners give me, you know, putts or whatever. You know, it just to me is frustrating that I can't keep an honest cap while being an honest player. So
makes sense.
Well,
that's all I got.
I'll tell you what, buddy. We had a small list of things we kind of sort of talked about, and then we went off course a lot, which I had a blast doing, for the record. So, yeah, we'll get you back on soon. I appreciate you jumping in last minute like this. You are the man. Any parting words for the group?
Go out and play some golf this weekend if you can, and enjoy it. Don't, yes. No frustration, no club throwing, no club slamming. Just enjoy
That's
your
what
time
I'm talking
out there.
About.
Play 12 holes.
I'm playing a scramble tomorrow.
That sounds horrible.
And then I'm playing 2 rounds for the weekend. So I will report back on social whether my soft cap still exists, when it will.
Yes.
But anyone out there playing, have a ton of fun. Enjoy it, and we'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.